And we're pretty delighted here tonight, Bob, because we got somebody on the phone that we've wanted to talk to quite often.
That's right.
In fact, about every Friday when either you or I bring apples up to the studio.
Apples in here. I think I've had more apples this year than in my whole life.
And they're well worth it these days.
They really are. You know, I was reading a deal by a guy by the name of Michael Pollan, who wrote In Defense of Food. Mm-hmm. And his thing for hunger, how to decide if you're really hungry, are you hungry enough to eat an apple?
Oh, yeah,
and
well.
And if you are, eat the apple.
Yep.
So that's what we've been doing.
We must be hungry all the time.
That's right.
We want to welcome David Bedford to the Roadhouse here tonight. David is an apple researcher, an apple breeder down at the U of M, down in the Landscape Arboretum. It's about 30 miles west of Minneapolis. He's been doing this job since 1979, and he's been doing an amazing job of it because some of the apples that you're tasting in our local stores and throughout Minnesota and actually throughout the world now have come due to David's research and creator of probably the biggest thing to have happen in the apple world for who knows how long, and that's the Honeycrisp apple. David, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
Good to have you here. And of course, you also have a local connection to Cook County, having a cottage up near Hovland.
That's right. Yeah, I'd love to get up there, and we get up as often as we can.
As you were hearing Bob and I discuss the Honeycrisp apple, I think in produce world, the most misnamed fruit ever is the Red Delicious apple.
Well, we grew up on that one, didn't we? Yeah, I have to agree with you. I always say if there was any enforcement in the laws of truth in advertising, that one would have been pulled a long time ago, because I guess we have to admit it is red, but it's really anything but delicious. And I was raised on it, too, and in fact, as a child, I didn't even like apples. And I attribute that solely to Red Delicious. So I look at myself as a recovering Red Delicious eater.
Now, how did it happen in your mind that those Red Delicious apples ended up in every school and every kid's lunchbox? And, you know, now we wouldn't put up with that.
Yeah. Well, it was a strange time back then, and I think what happened really is the produce buyers kind of hijacked the produce department for a while, and in their collective wisdom, they decided that red was better, and I guess we didn't have much choice. We kind of went along with it, and when it, you know, if you set the criteria for a good apple as big and red, if that's all you're asking for, well, Red Delicious does come out on top. But somewhere along the line, they forgot to ask us about texture and flavor and the things that really matter in an apple. And so for a while, things got kind of out of balance with Red Delicious dominating. But I always say we're thankful that things did get rebalanced again, and I really have to give the credit, believe it or not, to Granny Smith. And not that Granny Smith is the perfect apple by any means, but back in the early 80s when it kind of came onto the scene, it was really the only option that wasn't a big red apple. And Red Delicious had kind of gobbled up that market, like I say. And Granny Smith came onto the scene, kind of the anti-Red Delicious. And in its time, it was a good apple when it was grown properly. Now, I can't really say that anymore, but it gave us an alternative, and people started voting with their pocketbooks and their mouth. And the little chink kind of developed in the armor of Red Delicious, and then since that, a number of varieties have come in, and we've gotten back to, I guess, offering apples based on texture and flavor and what I like to call eating experience rather than looking experience.
Well, as we were talking earlier, the Honeycrisp, of course, is the most famous of the apples that you've developed there at the Arboretum. And I should mention to folks that probably aren't aware of just how valuable a creation like this can be. The Honeycrisp is actually the third most valuable invention ever produced at the U of M.
Well, we're fortunate, yes. It's fun when we get a winner, and it's a slow process, I can tell you, but when we do get one, we enjoy every minute of it.
I think it's been worth about a little over $10 million to the University of Minnesota since you originally patented it.
That's what I understand, yeah.
And also, it's something that I didn't think much, and I don't think most people think much about those things, but apples are branded. They're patented, and they're trademarked.
That's correct, yeah. That's a fairly recent development. In fact, Honeycrisp was the first of the varieties that was patented by the university. And, the breeding program actually is 100 years old now, but the first patented one occurred just about 20 years ago with Honeycrisp. Mm.
And I believe that it almost didn't happen. Maybe you can tell folks a little bit about that.
Well, yes, the actual selection was made some time before I arrived. The cross had been made earlier, and the tree had actually been selected. As we do with our breeding program, there's thousands of trees that we generate through crossbreeding, and then a small number of those are selected for further testing. And the Honeycrisp tree had been selected for further testing, and four trees had been cloned of that. And when we say cloning, it's not the scary thing of producing people from fingernails or something. It's as simple as grafting. But at any rate, those four trees had been propagated. And at that time, shortly after that time, there was a bad winter in Minnesota, and the original Honeycrisp tree showed a fair amount of winter injury on it. And so the breeder at the time didn't have too much of a description of the fruit, and in looking at the fact that the tree had been injured, decided to discard it. And so the original tree was discarded, but fortunately those four trees that had been propagated for further testing survived. And so when I arrived, I found those four. And they didn't have any fruit on them, and I was very close to throwing them away, too, because, after all, the record said this variety is not winter hardy, and that's one thing we're pretty tough on in our program, is they do have to be able to survive our winters. But as I looked at the data, I could see that the original tree had been planted in a fairly poor site, was low and wet. And the winter that it had the injury was an extremely cold winter, and I'd heard people talking about that for years. And so I thought, well, you might as well give these other four trees a little chance here and see what happens. And a couple of years later, then they started bearing fruit, and I was pretty happy that it didn't get thrown away at that point.
And it kind of just went from there.
It did, yeah. We then sent it around the country for testing, one thing kind of led to another. But it's amazing how slow it is. Well, the whole process, for example, from start to finish, from the breeding to the time we do the breeding to the time that we release a variety to the public is about 30 years.
Isn't that amazing?
That's exactly what it was for Honeycrisp, was 31 years from the time the cross was made till we released it. And then it's generally another 15 years before a variety catches on commercially. And Honeycrisp moved pretty quickly, but if you think of us having released that in 1991, that's 20 years ago, and many people have known Honeycrisp for 5 or 6 or 8 years, but not too many people really have known it for 20 years, and that's how old it is in terms of a release. So you sort of start to realize that the whole process is very long, and in fact, last year would have been the 50th birthday, basically, of Honeycrisp. And when you think that many people in the country haven't even tasted it yet, you realize that it is a pretty slow process. So we have learned to be patient.
I think there was a 1961 or something that it was originally, what would that be?
Well, the original cross was made then. That's right.
Exactly. Yes. Wow.
So anything you're working on now, I shouldn't even worry about tasting. I don't think I'm going to be around in 50 years.
Well, I mean, the good news is the more apples you eat, the longer you live. So keep eating those, and you'll see some of the little ones we're working on today, I hope.
And you have a number of other apples that you've developed there at the Arboretum, the Zestar, the Snow Sweet, which I believe is yet to be seen in this neck of the woods, the Sweet Tango that we have been able to experience, and I believe one more that I must have missed.
Well, we have a little one that might be of interest, especially up far north. It's called Frostbite. And it's an interesting story. Most of the varieties over the 100-plus years we've been here, we've introduced 26 varieties, and most of them have been aimed at commercially viable varieties. That and some of those go back way back to Harrelson. You know, Harrelson the most outstanding apple in the state until Honeycrisp came along, and that one came from 1922, so it had some pretty good longevity, and still does. There's still many people that love Harrelson. But with Frostbite was actually a very old variety, 50, 60 years old. It wasn't a variety. It was just one that we use for breeding. And, in fact, it is the grandparent of Honeycrisp, as a matter of fact. But it's a very unusual. It's a little apple and not the most attractive thing. has a few other not-so-endearing qualities for commercial growers, but... the thing about that apple is that we've grown it up in Zone 3, which would be the zone you'd be in, at least inland from the lake, for 30, 40 years up around Grand Rapids. We have a research station there, and that has just been rock-solid hardy. So we thought, well, we might as well release that one, and at least for people that have trouble growing anything else, there's one that should stand up. So that was the original idea behind that, and in fact, we decided to have a naming contest for it since this was not going to be a commercial variety. We didn't have to worry about the trademarking and all those rules and whatnot. We decided to have a naming contest for it, and so we allowed people to enter names, and I thought we'd get, I don't know, in the neighborhood of 400 or 500 submissions, something like that. Well, it turned out that the news got out, it got on the UPI wire, and we started getting names from Texas and Hawaii and Alaska. And when it was all said and done, we had over 7,000 submissions for that little apple. And but we finally decided on the Frostbite because it kind of represented its hardy roots. But the other thing I wanted to tell you about that one, it's so unusual for its flavor. And I'd have to say it is the most powerfully flavorful apple I've ever tasted. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody loves it, because it's been described as everything from sauerkraut to molasses to sugar cane and tutti frutti. It's a real wild mix of flavors. So I'd have to warn your listeners, it might not be for everybody.
Now, when would we be thinking of even seeing that Frostbite apple?
Well, you probably never will, to be honest. unless you grow it yourself. And the reason I say that is because of its small size and its kind of homely appearance. Commercial growers really aren't likely to grow it because it really is not going to stand up against anything in the store. But you can grow it yourself, and there are a few trees available. You'd probably have to check the internet. There's a couple nurseries that do grow them and would send them to you by mail, that sort of thing. So that's probably what you're going to have to do is grow it yourself. But and I would caution, don't make it your only tree. Well, number one, apples need cross-pollination,
right.
And so you're going to need at least two. But realize that it's a unique apple, and you may not love it, but if you want to have a little fun with apple flavors, it would be a good one to experiment with.
We're speaking with David Bedford, and he's a apple breeder down at the University of Minnesota at the Landscape Arboretum. He's come up with a number of varieties of winning apples here in the state of Minnesota, including the Honeycrisp. We don't have a lot of time, David. I got to apologize for that. I had some self-created technical problems.
Sure.
But I would like to ask you, what makes a great apple in your mind?
Well, you know, there's about 20 different characteristics that I have to look at each selection when I'm making it. But there's two of those traits that go right to the top of the list and are, in my mind, the two most important. And that is texture and flavor. And everything else is a distant second, third, fourth after that. And there are some things, like if we look at Red Delicious, obviously appearance is what that one's all about. And we're not looking for ugly apples down here, but we really believe that an apple should be about an eating experience. And, you know, if you want a looking experience, we recommend that you get a nice wax apple, put it on the table, and look at it to your heart's content. But if you want an eating experience, you have to have texture and flavor.
You know, during the season, when you're really working in the fall, testing varieties of apples, you bite into about 600 apples every day. Do you ever get tired of eating apples, David?
Well, yeah, several times a week I get tired of them, okay. I have to admit. But the good news is usually a good meal at night and a good night's sleep usually cures that problem. It's not permanent. That's the good news.
Well, that's great. We've been speaking with David Bedford, and David, as I mentioned, is the apple breeder down at the University of Minnesota at Landscape Arboretum. David, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time on a Friday night, and that I hope that you'll join us again, maybe towards next apple season.
I'd be delighted to. Glad to speak with you and your audience.
We'll catch up with you again then. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you.